From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 877, Building Your Data Analytics Team at SQL Bits, recorded Saturday, March 18th, 2023. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Welcome, everyone. Thanks for coming out to Run As Radio. My name is Richard Campbell. I'm your host and excited to be here in Newport in Wales at the ICC Center for SQL Bits. And we're doing a panel in front of an enthusiastic live audience that was at a party late last night, because that happens. And we have a great set of panelists here to talk a little bit about the reality of building your own data teams these days. So I'm going to get you to introduce yourselves. Anu, I'll start with you. And you're in New Zealand?
That's right. So I live in Wellington, New Zealand. And so I work in IT for the past 20 plus years. And being a woman and working in IT always started with a challenge. And but I'm currently enjoying because there are more opportunities these days women get. And so I started my career as a developer, but always had passion with data. So then I think over a decade ago, I would think like I started thinking about, so I'm more passionate about data. What am I doing in the development space? So let me switch over and start focusing more around data and analytics space. So currently, I do independent consulting. I have my own company back in Wellington, New Zealand, doing consulting work and training for my clients based in majority around the APAC region, and some I do in UK and US too.
I'm just thinking about how crazy it is that you're in New Zealand, we're here in Wales. Like, location doesn't seem to matter, and yet we're able to make this work. So thank you for being part of this. Malik.
Phalic, sorry. I'm a principal consultant at Advanced Analytics, which is a consultancy here in the UK. I've been in data now for about 15 years, and I started my career as a trainee business analyst, so kind of became very non-technical, then kind of went into the technical side. I've done a wide range of roles in between and before I become a data engineer. And I kind of focus on Azure, cloud, and things like Terraform and Databricks.
Awesome. And so it's clearly data analytics part of your day in, day out too now.
Yes, it is. I mean, there's an on off. So it's a lot of data engineering. So it's about building those pipelines to the end. But, data analytics is always important because our end goal is to enable the data analytics for the end user.
Yeah, that's the end goal. We need the engineering part to get there.
Exactly.
Excellent. Maria, please introduce yourself.
I'm a Microsoft Data Platform MVP and a Cloud Data Architect. I've started as SQL Server DBA 20 years ago and somehow just went into the, 6 years ago, to the world of different technologies, and has started to, first of all, was really hard, and then I have started to enjoy learning Postgres and Oracle and Snowflake cloud services, and really enjoy it. Awesome. And now I'm working in BNY Mellon and managing a big data team in Tel Aviv in Israel.
Awesome. So the premise of the show is that it's harder and harder to hire people into the data roles. Maybe we need to define the different roles we're trying to fill these days. We've already briefly hit on this whole idea of data engineering versus data analytics. How do you break these down? What kind of jobs do we need to fill inside of our organizations? Go ahead, Falcon.
I can start. The engineering tends to be kind of the, surfacing that data for the analytics, and the analytics will be the ones who speak to the business, get the requirements, and understand how they want that data visualized. So to break out is partly to do with the technologies being used. Mm-hmm. So a data engineer may be more focused on things like data warehousing concepts and more modeling concepts, where the data analysts will be more focused on understanding some of the reporting serving layer, and again, a bit of modeling there, but visualization and understanding how to tell a story.
And you started out on the programming side, so you were building the software that fed the databases in the first place.
Yes, that's right. So I was a developer, right? So in terms of the roles, these days, what I find is in organizations is around data architect. We also have data modelers and data engineers, as well as data analysts. So data modelers, this is mainly for domain-specific things where once you create the model, it's easy for engineers, like how to move the data from existing data stores to the new data stores, because the new data stores, they are not sure about, like, okay, how do we do the model? In some place, organizations, I could find there is an overlap between these roles, but majority what I find is data modelers also is a specific skill set. And so basically, which requires a bit more domain experience before they can start doing any type of models.
And that was my question on my tip of my tongue there was, so is the data modeler looking at the data and saying, here's what we can talk about, or they look at the business and say, here's what we need to know?
So it is more around that this is what we need to know.
Yeah. So the main
experience. So what they really look at that is, so a lot of people just think modeling is like, take the CSV file, what we get, and then create a table with the same stuff. And I have seen a lot of databases not even having a referential integrity in there, or even not even thought about like relationships between the tables and stuff. So data modelers, pretty much what I notice is organizations that help them to put these best practices in place, like when you are actually storing data in, whether it's relational or analytical databases, but also like what they provide, especially the businesses, is like, okay, this is how you can store the data and model and store the data and also get value out of it. So the analyst piece comes in around the value side, but I would say it's more the data modelers is around adhering to the best practices on how to structure the data.
It sounds like that's a person that's very tough to hire in from the outside. Like, I'd rather take someone with domain experience within the organization who already knows what's important to the business and help them move into that modeling role.
I think having a domain experience definitely adds value, but I wouldn't say like this is something that needs to be always within the organization. As long as you have modelers who can pick up these domains pretty quickly once they engage with the business and with the customers. Because I have done quite a few modeling exercises with clients. And of course, like, it's not like immediately you go there and look at the data and say like, yeah, let me start doing the model. A lot of conversations you need to have. At most, I would say like a 2 to 3 months, you get into understanding the domain. And if you are a pretty quick learner about the domain, then pretty much you will be able to do it.
So after we got to a modeling point, I'm thinking about the engineering side now. It's like, I know what I want to see. Now, how do I actually get, where do I get that data from and how do I organize it?
I want to add a little bit to the gut data requirement gathering. From one point of view, of course, if you know the company and, you know, business, you can gather data maybe easily. But it's really important that person who is asking right questions would be technical, mm-hmm. because business has all answers. You just need to know which questions to ask. And you don't need to have, because knowing business gives you preconceptions. You sometimes can think that you know and don't ask proper question,
right.
and get, you know, into the different direction and provide solutions that you think suit, but that's not what client wanted.
I mean, of course, then what do you mean when you say technical too? Is this about the hardware? Is this about knowing the applications?
Knowing the services that mm-hmm. are there, you know, knowing how you can build the architecture mm-hmm. can help you to ask right questions, because in order to choose which technology to use to process the data and to serve it, there are different questions that you need to ask.
Sure. It strikes me that it's very easy to design a system you don't have to build.
Yeah, this is another thing. Yeah, a lot of people are just architects and they're talking and talking and talking, but you know, there's nothing under that.
My experience of being a good architect is then being there when the engineers are trying to build it and finding the problems and saying, how do we, what point do we modify the architecture to reflect the reality on the ground?
Exactly.
It's an interesting balance. And it seems like a very specialized skill set too. Like that's going to take some training and some time to get good at that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Can we talk a little bit about the tooling side of this? Like what sort of, we're at a SQL Server conference for better or worse. Although let's face it, the Microsoft data landscape these days involves a lot of products. There's a ton of Power BI here as well as other products. But I've also heard a bunch of other names. You said Snowflake, Databricks. Like what are the tools that these different groups need?
We need ingestion tool. Mm-hmm. And then we need to ask all kind of questions. Where do we take data from? APIs? Do we have internal data on-prem? And, you know, there is a lot of questions around ingestion the data. Then we want to decide where do we keep the data and what will be modeling structure. Like we want, you know, put the data only on data lake mm-hmm. or maybe, you know, we want multiple data lakes. If we want multiple cloud services for that DR perspective.
Right.
Maybe we want to do parallel loading into different cloud services. Some companies go that direction. Then we would need tool to for that enrichment and processing. And then we would need to choose tool for data serving. There's a lot of questions. How, who are clients? Who are going to be using the data?
Sure.
And on all those stages, they're going to be users. They're going to be users for raw data and for in clean data, the different set of users, maybe data analysts who would do ad hoc data analysis to see what we got from the client and if all data quality rules were proper, if we haven't missed anything. And then, you know, data marts, when we prepare the data, aggregate it, where do we serve it from? Into Power BI, Tableau, maybe some APIs, internal APIs, mm-hmm. and that there's a whole bunch
of
questions.
A lot of different pieces. Yeah, I was thinking one ingestion. It's like, do I really need anything other than SSIS? Isn't that the perfect tool?
No. Well, it is amazing tool if you want to work with SQL Server because
right.
it's really fast. If you try to do the same thing in Data Factory, I'm sorry, Microsoft, but it's so expensive. And for each operation, there is another connect. It needs to establish connection.
Right.
It's so slow. So if you work with monolithic database, then you would choose monolithic data processing tool.
Interesting.
As when you start working with multiple data sources, you need to think of some different solution for data ingestion and processing.
For sure.
I was going to say, I guess we're saying it depends because though with anything, there's so many technology. It could be
somebody
anything.
Here could be a consultant. You already said it depends.
It depends. Yeah. it's in my blood now. There's so many technology. And I think as much as you're saying, what technology should I use? It's not all about technology. It's about the processes. It's about the people as well. Because you can have the technology there, but if you don't have the process, to get to where you want to, like the ingestion process, like the orchestration process, the serving process, you're not going to be able to do it. So it is great knowing the technology, but also know the fundamentals of how to get there. Because a lot of times you can sell the technology if you know how to work with it and how to build those simple processes in, and that's where the people come in as well, because it's change of culture, it's change of people's mindsets as well. So yeah, it's a variety of things to pick that right technology.
Sure. Annie, you look like you had something about to say.
Yeah, I agree with that, because it's a combination of people, process and technology, especially like technology wise there is a variety of options currently we have got. And one thing is, it's nice, but it's also challenging, because like organizations pick and choose. Sometimes they say, come and use Snowflake because it's a buzzword in the market, and then start using it. And then On the other hand, I have also heard like, okay, Snowflake is not going to be best for you. Come and use Teradata. So doing like what is good for an organization is currently becoming really challenging because you have to do options analysis to find out what is going to meet their needs. But I would say like a process is another important aspect apart from just the technology side. Because you can buy any technology, but if you don't follow the right processes, for instance, like how do you do your like loading of your data from source to destination, like how do you capture your metadata, how do you do the traceability stuff, like how do you do your monitoring, like restartability of your loads. So these are all other things that needs to be considered, not just like I have a tool, I can use it. Because tool can do only to a certain extent, but the people and processes around that is also equally important.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that at all. It's really a question of finding folks to fit in each of those roles and making sure they understand the pieces they need to do.
It's about knowing what those roles are as well.
Well, it makes me wonder, do I need a consultant to help set this up?
Well, no, but it's about understanding what the different personas are in these positions, mm-hmm. in these roles. You know, if you've got an infrastructure person trying to do visualization, you're probably not the right person. So it's about mapping out these roles. Okay, what am I expecting from a person in a visualization role? What skill set should they have? What are their responsibilities are going to be? And knowing that, yes, okay, you've got your job descriptions, but realistically, if you speak to those people and say, okay, what do you do in a day-to-day that we need to make sure that we have the next person who might come in into the similar role? That really helps. And organizations don't necessarily do that. And the people who are making those job descriptions are HR, and they don't really know the technology.
No.
They don't know what the day in, day out job is.
I think we defer too much to HR in those particular problems. Like, you really need to define your team yourself and tell HR what you need rather than let them try and fill those.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Correct. I mean, we shouldn't expect them to have those technical skills. That's not their job, right? They're going to go through the recruiting process. That being said, what certifications are there? Like, I don't know how you find or even determine a qualified data architect.
It's hard.
Yeah. I don't think of any certifications being there, especially for a data architect.
I think what you said is very important. All of us said it. In fact, as soon as you have the requirements for positions, for personas that you have identified that you need, then you can start searching for people with the exact skills that right. you're looking for. And because a person can call themselves a data analyst on their CV, or they call themselves data engineer, but probably their perception of data engineer is different from what you're looking for.
Right.
And that's what I see a lot when I'm trying to hire people. It's just they're coming and their experience is not what I'm expecting to have.
There's a new buzzword for data analysts are now analytic engineers.
Right.
So it's
engineer sounds like you pay them more.
It's just constant changes of you know, the buzzwords. It's but essentially, if you know what you're trying to do and what you're trying to achieve, I don't think it should matter what that job title is or what it so having those skills is vital. Going back to your question about the certifications and what you need to do, there are so many certifications out there that you can do on all the cloud platforms and different applications. And I guess as individuals, you know, it's looking at the market, seeing what other people are doing and knowing that that's the kind of maybe the way to follow. And they will give you the skill sets of to be, you know, this is your solution architect certification that you can do with Azure, but there's a similar one for Google, there's a similar one for AWS. And if you're in that, if you're using that technology, you should be doing the research to kind of say, okay, what is going to give me the skill sets, increase my knowledge? And it's a stepping stone as well. It's not going to make you a solutions architect by going through a certification,
right?
Because obviously the experience comes with that.
Matters.
Yeah,
a lot.
I would value experience over certifications,
yes,
for sure.
Anytime.
I agree.
No, and for better or worse, like, this is where we are as an industry, that there isn't good enough qualifications, mostly because the target's moving so fast. Products are different every month.
Yeah.
So one more point to add into that is there is always this blur line when it comes to like a data analyst with a data engineering. I can understand in very large organizations, maybe there is a clear distinction between these roles, but some small to medium-sized organizations, what I have noticed is basically especially if you use tools like Power BI, right, you have the ability to do modeling and extracting the data directly inside Power BI, and you can start building visualization. So then there is a blur in terms of like, okay, what is the data engineering role in there versus the data analyst role in there?
And I feel like that's going to evolve over time. Like usually we're not told build an entire data analytics practice and you get to hire up and down the whole stack. They're going to want to take a stripe out of it. It's like, show me some value. You know, on the software side, we have the mythological full stack developer. Like, is there the full stack data person that could literally start from scratch with a database and get to a Power BI report as the sample? Is that even a thing?
I don't think it's a thing. I think it's evolved. Some people are doing it. But, you know, so Power BI being a great tool because, you know, you have got that ingestion. So that's kind of, you know, you're using Power Query to ingest, you're using modeling to do your models, you've got visualization. That's three roles we just kind of mentioned.
Right.
That could be individual roles. And that person who's taking on that role is probably going to be good at one of the three.
Right.
And that's probably going to be their kind of the niche.
I would feel like the tool's also like that too. Like it can do a bit of ingestion, but you're going to hit the wall pretty fast with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Every tool Microsoft is building this, it's not Microsoft, all companies, I think, can do everything from ingestion to data processing and visualization. And that it doesn't mean you should use this tool for everything. Like, you know, monolith days are over.
Right.
We all are now in the cloud world where there's a lot of services that can do specific tasks very good. And that's where you would need architect for.
Just because it says
decide.
It can do it doesn't mean it's good at it.
It doesn't mean you should use it. And it's like such coupling, never good.
Right.
Monolith is never good. It's usually very difficult afterwards to introduce changes, to change technology if you're using one product for everything. Just splitting into multiple products is hard. It's like spaghetti.
Right.
Like so we once had all processes inside SQL Server, and then, you know, splitting it into the different apps.
It's hard. Except I still feel like we're headed on that path inevitably, that we start simply with, say, just a test run with Power BI, and we do make it do all of the things. And heaven help us if we're successful. They're like, okay, ship it. And now milled 15 more of these. And now you've got to go back and say, well, we need some better tools. We've got to add some more people. There's some additional skill sets we need.
Yeah. And usually this won't scale.
Right.
As soon as you have monolith, it's really difficult to scale it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're going to hit that wall every time and you're going to have to go back and explain.
And it can be very expensive in cloud having everything in the same service.
I mean, is it more expensive than having to buy all that hardware?
Yeah, I think so. I see a lot of projects where people just lift and shift from SQL Server to cloud, like say managed instance. And then they're like, wow, cloud
Look
is so slow and so expensive. I would do this in on-prem for less money. And then you say, yeah, why would you have staging area inside SQL Server to put it on a data lake?
Right.
Why would you do caching inside tables in SQL Server? Put it in Redis and, you know, pay $20 in the same cloud. All clouds support all those technologies. And then use SQL Server for what it's good for transactions, insert
right.
updates and delete, or LTP. That's
what it was supposed to be for.
That's where it's supposed to be. And that's where it's worth its money because it's doing it really well.
Right.
You don't use it for data warehousing.
Yeah.
Use something else.
We did, though. And folks, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. This episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by the Humanitarian Toolbox. Humanitarian Toolbox builds open source software for disaster relief organizations. One of the leading projects called 2 Weeks Ready helps individuals, families, and communities prepare for disasters using smartphones. HTBox builds and operates this and other applications on behalf of a variety of disaster response organizations, and they need your help. Go to htbox.org for more information or to make a tax-deductible donation. HTBox is a 501c3 U.S. registered charity. Your donations help support the creation of this life-saving software. Thanks. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. I'm here at SQL Bits in Wales with my panelists, Anu, Falak, and Maria. I even got their names right this time. I wanted to talk more about the cloud side of things. So I thought the cloud made data warehousing, data analytics, all of this a lot more approachable because we could do those experiments, stand up instances, do a test, and know we could shut it back down again. rather than, you know, what I remember from the late 90s, early aughts, where we spent a year planning a data warehouse, ordering all that equipment, and then hoping we were right. You know, you don't know if you're right till 18 months after the beginning.
There's still got to be some elements of planning. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's what the solution architect, your data architects, all of these different people going to plan, you know, what the technology is going to be, what the process is going to be, how you're going to do it. So there needs to be a plan. And also that's going to help you build, make sure that you're hitting the requirements. And then there's the technique of fail fast. So you don't take everything. You start off small and you incrementally then make sure that it's working. Make sure you've ticked all the boxes that you need to. Your end users are happy with the product, and then you kind of go and load the rest of your warehouse into it.
Right.
And I guess, you know, people, it's the knowledge. People don't have the proper knowledge, thinking that doing a lift and shift, yeah, we'll move it, it'll be cheaper.
Yeah, but it won't be.
It depends all on the kind of way you've done it. Like, if you've lift and shift straight into SQL managed instance, of course it's going to be really expensive, because essentially it's still an infrastructure application. So, but then if you put it all into the lake and gone through the whole lake structure, then it's going to be cheaper.
Right.
But it will all vary depending on, and that's where the knowledge comes in. It's really important to know the different patterns of it and the processes. And again, we go back to that whole thing of, it's not just about the technology, it's about how you build that and the architecture and the tools to fit that those needs.
It does feel like you could take a few runs at this too. Like, that you don't have to try and get it all right in the first place. You can stand some stuff up, see where you get to after a couple of weeks of experimentation, and say, all right, I think we can do this better, and try again.
Yes. And then that's where you do little pilots, POCs, and that's kind of, take that little subset of data or one or two systems, and then just kind of push that across and test that and see how that looks.
Yeah, I'm just scared now that if I get good results with a small data set and people are pretty excited, and then they see the price when we load everything. And they're like, okay, are we willing to pay that?
No, I think, Richard, I can answer that question, because I had a client where we just wanted to start a project at the time around migrating from Oracle to SQL. Mm-hmm. So they had a lot of data warehouses and operational data stores which needed to be migrated in SQL Server. And one of the challenge we had was like, okay, so we need an infrastructure, because at that time we couldn't go to cloud, and the cloud adoption in the organization wasn't there. So we said, like, okay, what is the infrastructure? We have to set up, like, get some VM host and things. And the response from the business was like, we just set up a SQL farm that is supporting our operational databases. Put your data warehouse in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the response we got. And they said, like, there is no other money. And just to prove that you guys can do what you're talking about. And exactly when you asked about the question, so we had to prove. And one thing what we noticed was, like, once you have proved that, like, okay, we can put some data. So what we didn't do is we didn't put terabytes of data in there. We put what can be handled in that farm, and then but started proving the value to the business.
Right.
And you won't believe, like, once we started proving the value, we got the approval to get our own VM host to build our data warehouse platform.
I mean, my instinct is that when we find actionable data that we can change the performance of the business from it, that's always worth far more than what we spent. It's just that the expense is very clear and the return is much more complicated to understand. So I think it's really a battle to say, can we equate this improvement in business to the analysis that we were able to do?
I'm not sure about how on the other side of the world, but on this side of the world around the APAC stuff, what I noticed with all the clients or all the organizations I have been to is pretty much they have everything from a tooling perspective.
Right.
So they have Power BI, they have business objects. When it comes to things, they have Cognos, because pretty much finance departments love Cognos.
Right.
So they want to have their reporting only in that platform. And then if you look at it from the data engineering aspect, they do everything. So they do things in Power Query. Still, a lot of organizations still use Excel. So they build reports in Excel. They store data in Excel. Excel has been heavily being used. So the point here is, like, from the technology side is, like, trying to, I can't see a way where we can go and tell them, like, this is the only thing that tool you need to use. It is going to be a mix of a combination, but as Maria mentioned, it's around using the right tool for the right data set. That is really important.
And so, we're all going to agree not to store data in Excel.
And consolidate the tools. So you don't need to have all the 5 or 6, but try and consolidate it.
Absolutely. We got a question?
Yeah, we have a question from online. It's from Thomas, who asks, what do you think about the budgeting side? Very often I see companies underpay the data and initiatives teams and therefore never fully utilize potential. What can we do better in this space?
How do we justify the amount of money we need to spend to be successful with these data tools? Like, you can certainly get into a trap where you spend a little bit and so we can't be successful. Like, it's always going to be mediocre. Like, it's really challenging to try and pull that money out. Have you battled it, this panelist?
Yeah.
Everybody, I mean, your team always gives you the money you need?
Yeah. Well, cost is always an interesting one, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, you know, they want to achieve, you know, it's like going to try and buy a Porsche, but you've only got money for, you know, a little Ford. But it's, you know, it's a difficult one because it's also hard to kind of quantify it when you're trying to do the budgeting because, you know, again, I don't want to keep using the word, but it depends on the kind of size of the data.
Sure.
It depends on the number of processes you're going to do per day. And that does scare people. And you try and be trying on the higher end to help them kind of gauge it, because if it's low, they like it. But if it's over your budget, then
they
don't like it. So you try and be.
You're talking about the Star Trek Scotty thing, like overestimate and deliver early.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
I think it's very important to calculate how current solution costs
right.
for a customer. I think most of them don't know. Okay, they probably think that it's maybe SQL Server licensing and that's it.
Yeah, that's
and then
true.
You start it together, Windows licensing and how much storage that you bought and a cost of the people, IT people who are serving there. And then when you have this amount, then you can put cloud in proportion.
You're saying arm yourself with more numbers than the finance guys.
Yeah.
I like that because then you can hit them where it counts. Right? We've done our homework. We've worked through our numbers. This is a reasonable spend.
I think this is very important.
Mm-hmm. I certainly like the idea of going out in industry too and getting standard numbers and saying, like, this is what most people spend. Are we as good as these folks? Like, getting competitors' numbers should be great for that.
It's difficult to get that number, though.
True.
It's like, you know, it's confidential stuff, so it's difficult unless you've worked on multiple clients to be able to kind of then take an average and you wouldn't say it. But, yeah, going to someone like Microsoft, oh, what's your average spend on your clients? They're not going to tell you that.
Yeah.
And then you've got things like size, like of databases that they've got, even number of tables inside a database. People don't know. They mm-hmm. don't know how much they're using. And even if they think they've got 1,000 tables, oh, yeah, we're using 1,000 tables. And then you go and build a process and you go, you're only using 10.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Just because you have those tables doesn't mean anybody's doing it.
Exactly. And it's the same with reports. You know, you've got thousands of SSRS reports, but actually you're only using 5.
Right.
The rest have never been opened. And it's that kind of analysis that is really useful for like a data team to be able to do. Because before they start going, let's lift and shift everything, actually, let's do an analysis on what we have and what we use.
And what we actually need to move.
And what we need to, and move. And then you can just archive the rest, and that will help with the cost.
And to Thomas's point there, part of being successful with a budget is showing the people who care about the budget that you're working that problem, that we're not wasting money. That showing, hey, we've gone through and shown what we need, what we don't need. So we're going to let these things go to emphasize the things we do need. And then if we do more of this, we'll get more value.
Yes.
I don't know lots of folks avoid the dollars and cents, but the ROI on data analytics is awesome if you choose to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you've got the next level as well. So, you know, after data analytics, you've got that whole data science concept, AI. It's the ability to kind of project and predict what's going to happen in the future. And that's a real benefit to the business. But you have to have the data and you have to have the initial analysis of how it's currently flowing before you can start predicting it. And that prediction stuff, that's where it's going to become even better. If you know, if I carry on down this route, I'm going to make X amount of within X amount of years, then, and that helps you plan your business better. Mm-hmm. So, and yeah, again, it all starts with that data analytics. You can't do the end bits until you've done the bits at the,
sure.
at the beginning.
Certainly, understanding what you have first helps. Anu?
So one more aspect I will add is like a data quality, because, we can do everything, but if you don't address the fundamental data quality issues, then what you get on the other side in terms of reporting and dashboarding is like they don't have any trust in those things. So that's a project that is currently I'm working on, where that we have a huge buy-in from the business. They are happy to spend the money, but what they want to spend the money on, getting the data quality issues fixed.
Right.
And so they have all the reporting, all the tools that we are talking about. And what they are now focusing is like, okay, we have everything, but what we get on the other side is we can't trust that data.
Right. I mean, I think when we were talking through those early scenarios, I was thinking about who's the person who deals with the fact that we have 8 different kinds of customer table. And yet our architect and our analyst, they just think about customer. They don't think about the fact that it comes from a lot of different places and trying to give a common representation of it. Although, would you even call that a data quality issue? That just seems like the normal thing that happens as systems evolve inside of organizations.
There's another role, like an enterprise architect, which would potentially mm-hmm. look after all your platform, all your databases and your systems and sources. So if you do got 8 tables of customer and they're coming from 8 sources, they may be the people who would do that. Mm-hmm. A data architect as well could potentially look at this data? Is it coming from 8 different sources? And they could potentially map it. So there is a role there. And again, but an organization has to enable that role and to say, right, do this as well. Make sure you know where all the data is and that how to bring it together. So we have a single version of the truth.
But once you presented me that problem, then we also have that conversation of, can we reduce the number of sources? Like, why do we have this many customer tables in all these different places? Could we do a quality effort to pull some of that stuff together so we don't have to do as much patching of data?
Yeah, I mean, it opens up that conversation, sure, to be able to do that. Just to say, okay, how can we do it? I mean, do we need, and that might be a great chance for us to decommission some of these systems. Mm-hmm. If you've got 8, you might not have been using one for the last couple of years because it's an older legacy system.
Right.
But because there's still customer data there, you're still calling to it. Well, maybe we can move that data somewhere in storage and decommission that. Forget the we don't have to pay for that licensing. So all of that can be enabled by having that single conversation.
Yeah, and you're bringing more money numbers to the table too. It's like, hey, if we decommission this is a spend that goes away. Don't worry, I have other uses for that money.
Yeah.
Having data catalog is really important. Mm-hmm. Data catalog allows data lineage, you know, to see where data comes from. Mm-hmm. And having procedures, like Anut said, like data audit, who is using what, mm-hmm, through data catalog can help you really to see what's used, what's not used, and where the data comes from, and who are the users.
Sounds like a great early initiative if you don't already have it in place.
That's a great point, Maria, because what I have noticed is every organization have got one or the other, like the Snowflakes or the likes of Teradata or the likes of Tableau or the likes of Power BI. But if you go and ask them, like, okay, do you have a data catalog or do you use any tools to capture the data catalog or data lineage? Nothing. So it is like always been an afterthought. So one of any projects that I do, that's the data governance and the data catalog is the first thing I look for. If they don't have, then that is where the fundamental thing that needs to be started in an organization.
Exactly.
Because otherwise you don't know what they have and they don't even know what they have.
Yeah, I was gonna add, I think partly organizations don't value that.
Right.
And that's probably why they don't, because it is a role. It's again another role that you could potentially have someone that's doing data governance that is doing all of this. And the expectation is for developers or analysts to build those catalogs, but then they might build it initially, but they're not maintain it. And that's when, and if once you stop maintaining these things, it becomes useless.
Yeah. So the data is incorrect.
The data is incorect. And then there are a lot of what that's cost. So yeah. Again, there's no value.
But you
no
may have even spent on those.
It's not flashy, and it's not going to show me figures going upwards or downwards. And that's why companies don't want to invest in that. And, you know, there are loads of tools out there that do it. And, but there is a big cost to them.
Well, and I also wonder if you haven't maintained it, it may not have access to all your systems. So it's still incorrect just because you haven't given it the new accounts for the new data sources that it should be cataloging for you. You know, one of the themes that's come out this year has been what Uncle Satya told us, to do more with less. Like I feel like for the first time in a long time, like a couple of decades, we are being pushed harder for return on investment that we've been able to spend pretty freely. So it seems like a really logical thing to do these sort of housekeeping related efforts with an eye to then being able to do more with the data teams going forward.
That's right, Richard, because if you have these evidences, then it's easy to have the conversation and we can easy to explain them around the justification of their spend.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's that confidence building you're doing to the leadership to say, we've done our homework. We've looked at what we're actually using, what we're not using, where we're spending, where we're not spending. And so we know what to cut and we know where to add. So, and get back to this original theme here and where we should probably be trained to be able to take advantage of some of the things we've already got. I don't think we've spent enough on that part. And it's not the most expensive thing to do. I don't know. Where do you go for training? What's the thing you lean on, Maria?
A lot of sites around us that provide training, but I really like just to deep dive into technology and start just playing with things and then looking for answers that that raise on the way. And then I think it's much, much better training this way. That's why I said in the beginning that I really value experience over certification.
Right. But they can also get experience with you, like to be a part of an initiative to take these products out for a spin and try things.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
There's a wide range of resources now that people can use. Obviously, you know, social media, Twitter, LinkedIn, all of those have blogs, have YouTube. There's a lot of material out there. You've got the training materials that the vendors do. I guess it's being proactive and finding something to do it. As individuals, you know, take ownership of your career and you know, even events like this, like this week has so many sessions in. Mm-hmm. You learn a little, but then you can go away and you can go, I want to learn more about that and do that deep dive and kind of start learning more about it. And then you become become an expert in that area. At the same time, organizations need to be able to build those CEOs, be able to kind of build a center of excellencies and say, okay, do a deep dive, become an expert in this area, do things like lunch and learns, and share the knowledge with other people within your organization and become a champion for that technology. And that really helps on that.
Certainly cultivating that inside of your organization. We're down to the last few minutes of the show. I'll encourage the audience, if you have any other questions, please let us know and we'll pass you the microphone and take your question. All right. What's the question?
Okay. We've got another question in from online. What skills do you find the most challenging to find in candidates for key roles within your data teams and especially leadership roles?
So what are the roles that are hard to fill, to hire into, or maybe even to train into? Like, do you have a particular one? It's like, if we find that person, we're good.
I can start. A lot of it is the soft skills side of things, communication, attitude, all of that. Technology can be taught, and there's so much technology changes, and monthly it's changing. So these things can be taught, and these things you can evolve and you can learn on the job. But if you don't have the right soft skills and you have the attitude to kind of go and be proactive and all that, that is really difficult. People think that they've got, I've used Power BI for 3 years. I'm excellent at it. But that, you know, that might not be the attitude. It's, oh yes, I still want to continue learning. I've taken this proactive view to learn modeling, to learn ingestions, to learn things. And that's very difficult to find.
Yeah, it occurred to me that the person who was good at using Power BI for that first test stripe may not be the person well suited for it when we grow it out and have folks that are focused on ingestion and focused on modeling, and the Power BI's piece is now just purely doing that representation part of the work.
Yeah, because you need to have that overview as well. You have the ability to kind of step away and see everything and not just be very tunnel visioned on it.
Yeah. I have problem now, like finding data engineers, filling data engineer role, because everyone who is coming with positions himself as data engineer usually don't have any data. It's not coming from the data world. They're coming from SSIS world. They know how to ask questions, to build pipelines, but they don't know, you know, basic stuff on SQL, on data modeling. And I think this should be part of the data engineer abilities. And this is really hard to find.
That a data engineer should know how to organize data in the first place, or know how to expect data to be organized.
Exactly. They should know. But most of them are really hands-on experience with Airflow and Python.
Right.
And IDF.
Useful skills.
Useful skills, but they also need to have base, strong, solid base of database management. I think this is very important.
Yeah.
And this is really hard to find.
Yeah. But can be taught.
I'm not sure. Here, I'm not sure. It just takes a lot of experience to know what the database is and how.
Does the mentoring model make sense for this? That we have mentors that are teaching those folks more about the data architecture as it exists in the organization?
Yeah, I think, Richard, that is going to help. Because just to give you an idea, last year, I was doing a bit of a training, it's a free training session for women. And one of the things I was just providing them is fundamentals around modeling and understanding what is this relational database mean, dimensional modeling really mean. So I think when you talked about training, right? So we have a lot of training for technologies like Power BI, Tableau, and things. But when it comes to best practices and how do you do modeling, what are the basics things a data professional need to know? We don't have any trainings or anything around that. So the reason for that is also is because you need to have that experience. So mentoring will definitely help because you can share a lot of experiences that you have gained from different organizations, which you can share. And that's how I can think that you can build it.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I was going to add to mentoring is really important. Mm-hmm. And I think if an organization does it, so for those people out there, if you don't have someone in your organization that can be a mentor, then find someone outside the organization. It is really important to learn those fundamentals, and having someone teach you them is that there aren't cut in the many courses. There's a lot of reading material, but again, it's not gonna you're not going to become a modeler or data modeler overnight. It's, mm-hmm. but talking to other people, and then they might be able to clear up things. So, yeah, my advice would be try and find someone. If you can't find someone in your organization, then outside of your organization.
I guess you do it.
So
it's fair.
So one thing to add on is one of the great feedback I received when I started learning about data modeling, because I started doing star schemas, and then always I do a data model and my colleague does a data model and we are trying to address the same problem, but sometimes what she does will be different to what I'm doing. So I usually think at that time, because it was my first data model, I said there should be a standard to do this, right? Because I can't do it in a different way and she can't do it in a different way. So, but then actually when I attended Kimball's training, and I was just asking this question directly to Rafael Kimball saying, this is the scenario I had in my organization where me and my colleague, we are trying to address the same problem. How we come up with a different model? How do we know which is the right model? So the response, the answer I got from him was really fascinating. He said, there is no one right model or wrong model. So what is you need to look for is is it going to give the results or the outcome that you're looking for? If that gives, that is the right thing. So it's not that whether you have created this table or that table, whether the relationship is not there, is it giving you what you're looking for on the other side? So after that, I never validate or just go and compare my model with anyone else's model, because it's going to be different, definitely. But what I look for is, am I getting the answers, or whether the business users are able to get the answers what they are looking for?
That's great.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, and then there's where those soft skills come in. Can the two of us sit together with our two interpretations model and hash it out in a positive way? We're about out of time. Anu, Falak, Maria, thank you so much for being a part of this. I really appreciate your efforts.
Thank you for the invitation.
And thank you for listening to Run As Radio.